Mother. Wife.
Air Force veteran.
Gun rights advocate.
This is Stacy on the Right. Here's your host, Stacy Washington.
And now it's time for the latest and sometimes saddest information about our law enforcement community. But we need the truth, and we don't shy away from it. We stare it in the face, and we square our shoulders up, and we take the truth in, because the truth is what will ultimately deliver us into a better place, a better way of living. So welcoming into the show, one of our favorite guests, Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith. She is retired from law enforcement, and she is a spokesperson for the National Police Association. The website is nationalpolice.org. Thanks so much for coming on, Sergeant Betsy.
Hey, Stacey, great to talk to you, as always.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. I was catching up with some of your tweets where you were commemorating the lives that have been lost recently, lives of wonderful career law enforcement officers who have been taken in the line of duty. It was kind of sobering to look at over the weekend when we're kind of running errands and, you know, doing this and that, and these men are giving their lives literally in service to us. For our safety and protection. So it's been a rough weekend for law enforcement.
It really has. You know, we just had the chief deputy of Moody County, South Dakota, was killed deploying stop sticks on Friday. And that, you know, what that is somebody was, running, and his guys were in pursuit. So he wanted to deploy these stop sticks, which is a way to puncture the tires of the vehicle that is fleeing. And the person driving the vehicle swerved to hit him and kill him. So the suspect is in custody. He is, you know, being charged with first-degree murder. And because it's South Dakota, he'll probably actually be punished. And, you know, but this is we already have 8 line of duty deaths this year. We have about 15 additional police officers shot in the line of duty this year already, you know, and it's the first week in February. So it's already been horrific this year.
I'm very, very saddened to hear that. And so that leads us into some of our stories for tonight. And I'm telling you, so this is the best job ever. It's also kind of the worst job ever, because I have to look at all the news. So I get all the hard news that some people just, they kind of compartmentalize, and they only watch news on a certain day of the week, like Monday, or they'll, you know, do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. A lot of people have different ways of dealing with the news. I have to do it all the time. And so I see all the stories, like the ones you just shared about these officers who've lost their lives. But I also, it's the best job, because I'll be reading a story and I'll think, man, I wonder what Sergeant Betsy thinks about this. And then I'll look at my calendar and I'll see, oh, she's coming on to talk about exactly this. And the subject is Governor Hochul, who literally, I thought maybe someone had possessed her body and was, you know, miming it in for her when she said that illegal aliens who had attacked the NYPD officers should be deported. And I thought, is she feverish? What's happening? Like, who is someone, their hand up their back, making her say this? What's happening right now? So what did you make of her? This is a 100% about face she's making here.
Well, here's the thing. And I was watching that press conference when she stood up there and said, no one touches our police officers. No one hurts our police officers. And again, like you, I thought, am I watching some sort of cartoon or Saturday Night Live thing or what? But then she goes on to blame the Republicans for the open border and say that if Republicans want to do something about the border, because she's saying the Democrats do want to do something, that they need to do it. And it's really the fault of the Republicans, which, of course, is laughable. But she needed to say something. And so I think what she did was turn it around, make it a partisan issue, and a laughably partisan issue, because it is, as we all know, the policies of President Joe Biden and the Democrats that have led to this now, you know, 3 years of an open border. And that's why our, you know, we saw that horrible video, everyone has seen it, of the NYPD patrolman and the lieutenant getting kicked, punched, beaten, And you know, even though we've had now a total of 7 arrested, I really don't think any of them are going to face much, if anything, in the way of punishment.
So I know why you think that, but it is an election year, and they were literally kicking police officers in the head. Do we know the status of the 2 officers involved, and why do you think there won't be anything done? Because it wouldn't be that big of a deal to have these migrants deported or even maybe serve some jail time, would it?
Well, no, it wouldn't. But they, of the ones that have been arrested, and I believe there are 7, ages, you know, 24, 19, 21, you know, so all young men in their late teens and 20s. Some are from Brooklyn. Some are from, you know, places as far away as Mississippi. Several of them have criminal records, but they are all except one are said to be migrants. One, they just identify him as a homeless guy. At least 4 of them are said to be on their way to California. Alvin Bragg, the district attorney there in Manhattan, is defending his decision not to ask them to be held on bail. You know, New York, like almost every place else in blue cities and counties around the nation, has, you know, no cash bail or some form of no bail. And but the district attorney can ask for people to be held. He is, Alvin Bragg, the district attorney there, is saying, well, you know, we don't really have all the information about this attack. And this and that. So he did not ask them for them to be held. So several are said to be on their way to California. And, you know, I just watched a news conference with the NYPD, including the chief of patrol. And he outlined what is happening at these migrant shelters in New York and what the police have been dealing with for the last year and a half, including extraordinary amounts of shoplifting. They're going into places like Sunglass Hut, you know, and stealing high-end sunglasses. Outside of these migrant shelters, like where those NYPD guys were beat up, there's ghost cars parked. There's mopeds. He said at least half of them stolen. They've got domestic violence happening inside the shelter. Sex crime, sex trafficking. It is a virtual den of criminal activities in these migrant shelters in New York. Kathy Hochul's blaming the Democrats, and the NYPD patrol chief is kind of throwing up his hands and saying, this is what we're trying to deal with, but it's a lot for them to deal with because, again, they're short-staffed, more migrants keep coming, and this is happening, of course, all around the country. Chicago, you know, Boston now has them living in the airport. And of course, here in Southern Arizona, and it has just become untenable.
It is, no doubt. So we know for a fact that some of the people who were arrested for this crime have already decamped to California?
Yes, that is what we are being told, that at least 4 of them are on their way. And you know, here's the thing. These are, again, all young men, late teens, early 20s, with no real ties to the community or to the country. And let's not forget that if any of them get to California, they in California, you get increased benefits, if you will. You get better health care. You get more money. You know, if you're going to be an illegal migrant, California is the best place to go. Now, there is still an ongoing investigation. There are still several of these suspects being sought. Because if you watch that video several times, you'll see there's about a dozen people that, including what I think is at least one woman, get their hands or their feet on these police officers. And I want to just say, you know, the police officers, you know, they're non-life-threatening injuries, but the trauma that those officers are going to have experienced and will continue to experience, that being pulled down like that on the ground, kicked, punched, And, you know this better than anybody, having that firearm, Stacey, where, you know, what are those cops thinking? I got to protect that firearm, protect that firearm. You know, that is a real life and death situation. And it's a trauma that they are going to live with for months and months, if not years, to come. So, you know, I want people to really keep that in mind and keep those police officers in their prayers as they recover from this attack, not just physically, but emotionally. But the investigation is ongoing, and Eric Adams, the mayor, is feeling the pressure. He's speaking out. Kathy Hochul is speaking out, the governor. And, of course, NYPD leadership is speaking out all against this sanctuary city that, yes, all of them embrace. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch. Of course, it's an election year, so it's going to be real popular to say, oh, we need to tighten up the borders, but we'll see.
Well, yeah, it's popular for her to say deportation, and then it's like almost like a mental jump that's made. She said deportation, you know, everything's fine, right? She's okay with deportation. If you've done something wrong, everything's fine. And people just file it away in the back of their mind. Meanwhile, the officers have to recover. And the community itself has been damaged because lawbreakers have yet again been allowed to prevail, where citizens, you know, they're getting pulled over for, you know, you have parking tickets, you have enforcement on your property taxes, you have enforcement on all kinds of things. And so the question becomes, what benefits do citizens have? We understand the migrants are getting, they're getting everything but the kitchen sink. But what's a citizen have to kind of say, you know, this is my benefit of being here lawfully and following the law? What is that exactly? Do citizens know anymore? It's a very weird place to be.
Well, and it is. And, you know, of course, last week I flew out of the Tucson International Airport yet again. I watched migrants walk through security ahead of me while they searched my computer bag, you know, took it off of the belt, and they searched it while I watched all the migrants with no ID, no plane tickets. You know, they get those at the counter inside. They have their manila envelope with their brand new iPhone. And again, as I watched that, and my husband and I were again talking about how these people are super citizens. They board the plane before us. They have a credit card that they are not paying the bill for, while they get expensive coffees and $27 pan pizzas from the airport restaurants and things like that. And that's exactly, as I sat there as a citizen, a tax-paying citizen, and I thought, they're super citizens. They get more and better stuff than I do. They don't have to pay for it. I do. And
you're paying
and
for it. You're paying for their stuff.
I really believe I see so many people that are weary, so many people that are tired of seeing it and are paying attention. And I'll tell you what, at my church this weekend, we had a voter registration drive and things like that. And so many more people who have never voted before are registering to vote, and they cite, here in Southern Arizona at least, the migrant crisis, as the media likes to call it, as the number one reason why these people want to come back and vote, because they're angry.
So I'm glad to hear that, but I almost feel like that our problem is we are watching. You know, no one is saying, you know, I'm taking my bag off the belt. And if they say, well, we have to search it, why? You didn't search him. He has a backpack. He doesn't have identification. How is he getting through the airport right now? And you just turn around and ask everyone who's in line with your identification and your boarding pass, and you're ready to show and prove that you belong here. What about all of these people? You know, maybe it takes an uprising at the airport where, you know, they like to shut airports down. They like to shut down roads. They like to shut down hospitals. Now, have you heard they're going after your services? So you can't get in. If you're bleeding to death, you can't get into the hospital because they're shutting it down for Palestine. Well, what about the idea that we can't keep allowing them to do this. We're literally paying for the migrants, everything, lock, stock, and barrel. And in response to that, we're still being treated like criminals because we are not terrorists. We actually don't need to take our shoes off. We don't need to have our laptops checked. We are not here to commit crimes. We're here to try to get on the plane as early as possible so we can get our shoes off and get settled in with our blankets and our earbuds and watch a free movie on the flight. That's us, you know, not criminals.
And you're right. You know, I'm always so frustrated when I have to deal with, you know, the TSA, you know, 94% failure rate on what they do, sadly. And you know what? You're right. But, you know, that's always the problem when you're just a normal conservative American, if you will. We don't do things like that, right? We don't disrupt. We don't block roads. We don't even particularly get angry. And when conservatives, law-abiding conservatives do get angry, then people start calling them names and saying, oh, you can't do these things. You can't do those things. And you're absolutely right. You know, I think we are coming to a point, and I see the frustration at the airports I go to around this country, where law-abiding people are frustrated, not just with who's getting on the airplanes and the way that they're able to streamline it, but then you get to an airport and you've got migrants living. You have migrants living in multiple airports around this country. And then you have them, you know, in the cities that you go to and into the suburbs, spilling out, you know, into the streets, kicking kids out of school. And again, from a political standpoint, you know, now you have this bipartisan bill that will really do nothing to help this. And but we're being told, we've got to have everybody's got to sign it. It's got to be passed. Boy, I hope it doesn't. But I think that is really a real big burr under the saddle of just normal law-abiding Americans that are just trying to live their lives. And so we're going to see what happens.
Well, so I agree with you. There is a bit of a crackdown, right? People don't want to necessarily get outside of the law. Look what happened to the people on J6. You know, they were walking around the Capitol. The doors were open for them by the Capitol Police. And, you know, many of them have been prosecuted to within an inch of their lives. It's very, very difficult. But then by the same token, you know, look at where we are. look at where we are as a country where we're standing by and we're just kind of blandly accepting what is obviously not just the breaking of the law, but it's a slap in the face to us. I was talking earlier on the show. They wanted the Senate bill that obviously is DOA when it gets to the House. So thank God for Speaker Johnson. But Betsy, the bill enshrines 5,000 illegal crossings a day. The bill enshrines $1.8 billion for the NGOs who are currently raking us over the coals financially to resettle these migrants. Apparently, according to OpenTheBooks.com, Biden has spent $20 billion over the last 2 years resettling these people. So, you know, the spigot just can't go on forever.
And yet it seems like it's going to. And again, and we've talked about this, what will happen when we get to a point in this country where we're going to have to round people up and have a mass deportations? And just from a law enforcement standpoint, because it's going to be law enforcement that is going to have to accomplish that task of mass deportation, it's going to be dangerous for law enforcement, and it's going to be dangerous for members of our citizens in our communities, you know, who are going to be affected by this as well. And that's when I look at this list of young men involved in the attack of these police officers in New York City, and I look at the multiple felonies they have been charged with, and knowing that not a single one of them sits in jail right now and that they are out and will undoubtedly reoffend. It's offensive to me knowing that these young men can put their hands on and their feet on police officers and then walk as free as you and I in this country and then escape where they are living for free now to go to someplace like California and live even better without much worry of punishment. And we've got to start talking about these migrants, these illegal aliens. They are not migrants. They have already broken the law by coming here. And now we're at the point where so many of them who are coming here, who are getting here, already have mental health issues. They have rap sheets in their own countries. They have already committed multiple crimes while traveling here. We are, as President Trump said many years ago, and it's more true than ever before, we're not getting their best and brightest in this country.
Oh, was that an understatement? Right? That was, when he said they're not sending their best, oh, everyone was so insulted. Well, look at the migrants kicking people in the head, right? Kicking the officers in the head. And they're not all. There are so many other crimes that have been committed. We can't keep up with it all. And so is every migrant a criminal? Well, if they're here illegally, that's a yes, right? They broke the first law, which is don't come into our house without properly having been invited and welcomed in. And we do that through a vetting process called legal immigration. Yeah, they're not sending their best and brightest, and the ones who are coming in are criminals. So you have a Ring doorbell system, which I believe is owned by Amazon, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe they aren't still, I'm not sure.
No, they absolutely are still owned by Amazon, which makes this story even more interesting. Yeah. But Ring has decided, now if you have, I actually own a Ring doorbell. So, when you get your Ring doorbell, you know, you have a little camera and then you get your Ring app and then you get a second app, which is called the Neighbor app that you have the option to download or not download. And with the Ring app, and the Neighbor app, there's a mechanism for police to, you know, very quickly reach out to a homeowner and say, hey, there was a stabbing, you know, five doors down from you last night. Can we get your footage from these time periods? And here's the thing. When Amazon first came out with the Ring camera, their people went around, their salesmen and saleswomen went around to about 2,000 police departments in the country and said, hey, we got this cool thing. It's a doorbell camera. Can we get your cooperation? Can we sign you up to be able to reach out to people? So they courted law enforcement. And so now fast forward a few years, and with the success of the Ring camera footage in helping catch criminals, they have reversed their policy in cooperating with police. They're going to, they call it sunset. They're going to sunset this request for assistance, it's called, through the Neighbor app. And they're going to make law enforcement either have to, A, directly contact the homeowner, either by coming to their house or trying to figure out what the phone number inside, or you're going to have to get a search warrant or a subpoena to get that footage, and Ring says they will only release footage in big emergencies, homicide, kidnapping, things like that. So it's frustrating. You know, I'm not big on the government being able to just willy-nilly get everything, you know, they want, even though I've been a government employee since I was 17 years old as a police dispatcher. But I do believe that the government should not have unfettered access to your data, to your phone, to your video. But what they've done is just make it difficult for cops to reach out to people and ask, hey, can we get your footage? And we find that very frustrating. And it was done, of course, in the name of basically in the name of wokeness, that that there were several people in Amazon and Ring who said, you know what? We don't want to turn neighborhoods into surveillance based areas. And we don't want racial profiling to happen with this Ring camera footage. It was, frankly, it was woke silliness.
But has racial profiling been happening? Because I that's the first thing I always ask Sergeant Betsy, is if they say something like, we don't want racial profiling, the first thing I'll ask is, oh, was there racial profiling? You know, was there legitimately a concern?
You know, they had not a single instance. I reached out to, you know, there's some blogs you can reach out to.
Sure.
You know, tech blogs who are reporting this, but they're like, could you give me some instances? I'd like to know. Of course not. It's the same. It's very similar to, if you recall, post 2014 and then, of course, post 2020, but especially 2014 when they said, all right, every cop's got to wear a body camera. And that's going to show the world how racist American law enforcement is and how terrible they are and all that. So most police officers got body cameras, and about 3 or 4 years into that, it started showing not racial profiling, it's not police brutality. It started showing the American public what law enforcement actually deals with when it comes to people. And then there were certain activists who said, body cameras are racist. We got to get rid of them. So this feels very much like that, and I was not able to find a single instance of racial profiling that came from Ring footage. And again, I have a Ring camera. My Ring camera doesn't see race. And do I want my Ring camera to capture what's happening in front of my house? Yes, that's why I bought it. So if all of my neighbors have a Ring or other, you know, there's not lots of other products now besides Amazon-based Ring. But do we all have, in my neighborhood, for example, almost everybody's got some kind of a camera. And that's the way people live now. And so if law enforcement, with permission from the homeowner, can get that footage, why would that be a bad thing?
Well, it wouldn't. It wouldn't be a bad thing. But I have to ask that, number one, because, you know, just somebody's mom on the radio, but also because, you know, if I don't ask you that, Sergeant Betsy, then someone will, well, you didn't ask if there actually was any racial profiling, you know, so people have this idea that we're hiding information or we're not asking because we don't want to know the truth. And That couldn't be further from what's on our minds here tonight as we're having this discussion. But it is really important to just have in your mind to be cognizant of the fact that there are bad actors. Like at Amazon, when you talk about within the company, you have individuals who are saying things like, well, but, you know, there's profiling. Well, but, you know, and so but by the time you get done with all that, well, you know, here you are again. It's got to be some racism. It's got to be some bad actors, as opposed to someone within the company who has an agenda, who wants to see something changed because they don't like it. I think your example of what happened with the body cams, it's so perfect because we were literally told that the racism of the police would finally be exposed if we just got the body cameras up, and that's why the funding was needed. And, you know, I never hear anything about body cameras anymore. And the reason is because body cameras exonerated police officers. People started to see the foolishness they had to deal with, and they thought, man, those police officers really have to put up with some nonsense.
And that's the thing. I think it's the same thing with your doorbell camera. You know, what are you going to catch on your doorbell camera? You know, a porch pirate, you know, taking your Amazon package or you know, somebody stealing a car that's parked in front of your house, you know, wherever you might have your camera and things like that. We also use them for investigative purposes. So if, let's say, five doors down, God forbid, my neighbor gets stabbed, my Ring camera might have the vehicles that were driving that way, or somebody running away from the crime scene, things like that. So that's all we're looking for. And again, we're not saying give police unfettered access to everyone's Ring camera or any type of doorbell camera. All we're asking for is to make it easier for the police to ask, to have that. And this is the thing. For people to be able to do that anonymously, provide the police with some video footage, it's in some neighborhoods, it's much safer for the homeowner, because there's a lot of neighborhoods where a homeowner wants to get that footage to the police, but if the police have no way of contacting them anonymously, they don't want a uniformed cop showing up at their door, and they don't want to be seen as cooperating with the police. And we also have to remember that with these apps, with the neighbor app, it's click, click, can I see your footage? It saves so much time for the cops at a time when most police departments continue to be shorthanded. And it just makes it easier for everyone. But Amazon has decided they're gonna sunset that. Now, they have been receiving some pressure, and so it could change, because it hasn't happened yet. It's I think it's supposed to happen March 1st. So
there is a chance that they might come to their senses. They might still.
Yeah, correct. And if people put pressure on Ring and say, "Hey, I really like this feature." You know, because that's the thing. You can, there's lots of features on your Ring app and on your neighbor app that you can opt out of. Why not just make it? Our suggestion is make it an opt-out option. So if you don't want to be contacted by the police, you can go into your app, go into your settings. Everybody knows how to do this stuff now, and opt out of the potential of being contacted by the police for your footage. Great compromise. I hope they do it.
Well, and I just would like to point out that on everything else, they usually don't drop it for you. They make you opt out. It's built in, and opting out, you got to go here, go there. You got to, you know, go up this side of the app and down the other and click this 8 times. And you got to watch a video on YouTube to figure out how to do it. And here they're basically taking it away and telling you, you know, you contact the police. And your point about neighborhood safety, and for people who live in a neighborhood where a police car parked outside your house could be a real problem for you. Yeah, that's not something people think about if they don't live in a neighborhood like that.
But a lot of people do. And that doorbell camera, it provides that extra measure of security, and the app provides an easy and anonymous way of interacting with the police. And don't we keep hearing that the police, that we need to do community policing, that we need to interact with our communities, we need to interact with the public? Why take away an easy way to do that?
I agree. So last story that you brought to us tonight, as we close out here, Oregon Democrats are backpedaling now on their desire to decriminalize drugs. Oh, Sergeant Betsy, whatever could have happened?
We're all so shocked by this, Stacey. When their legislature decided to, basically decriminalize every drug that there is, they had a plan. And it was folly, but, you know, their plan was to be able to get people treatment. Now, that's a great plan. You know, if you're going to get people to stop consuming drugs, you need to get them off drugs. The plan in Oregon was decriminalize everything. So if you get caught with drugs, either nothing happens to you, you get a little postcard that says, call this drug treatment hotline, or you might get a ticket. It was literally like a speeding ticket. And to get out of that ticket, you had to call the drug treatment hotline. And this was for virtually all serious drugs, fentanyl, heroin, cocaine, you name it. And they were going to pay for this drug treatment hotline and subsequent treatment for people with the tax dollars from the legal sale of marijuana. A little over 1% of people who were contacted by the police for doing drugs called that hotline. So virtually no one called it. And so what happened is people had unfettered use of serious, life-altering, mind-altering drugs. So, of course, overdoses, deaths and hospitalizations went through the roof, and then the crimes associated with those drugs also went up. Shoplifting, vehicle theft, things like that. Because we like to hear that drugs, you know, I'm a heroin user. It's a victimless crime. I'm the only one affected by it. Well, that's not true. And again, of course, we can go back to the southern border. The open border bringing in so many of these illegal drugs, including enough fentanyl to kill every man, woman, and child in this country. They're starting to find out in Oregon that people who use drugs get their drugs from people who deal drugs. People who use drugs often steal to get drugs, and people who deal drugs often commit other crimes. So,
shocking.
All those chickens came home to roost. So anyway, the Oregon legislature is looking at reversing some of that legislation, and we hope they do.
Groundbreaking. Stuff I've never heard before. They're breaking new ground in Oregon, I guess. Learning new things about drug-seeking behaviors. Imagine if they just use their supercomputers, their cell phones, to look up what usually happens. But they wanted to see it for themselves. They wanted firsthand data, right? That must be what happened.
And, it's so sad because, how many people had to die for them to pay attention? And that's this is so misdirected. This all goes back to, fighting against the left, fight against quote-unquote police brutality. And they didn't want these people to be coming in contact with the police, and the police were being mean for arresting them for drugs, and we were being, the courts were being mean for putting them in prison, where, by the way, they should be able to get drug treatment. So they said, and this is the thing, and I think there's a certain segment of the population, Stacey, that really believes this, that if you just let people do what they want, i.e. use heroin, fentanyl, things like that, they will eventually come to their own realization that this is bad for them. And I'm here to tell you that's just not true. And now the Oregon legislature is realizing that as well. But to the detriment of thousands of people who were horribly affected by these terrible drugs.
Yeah, these are the same people that you see down on the floor at the restaurant, and their child is kicking and screaming and has been doing so for 30 minutes, and the mom finally gets up, puts her phone down, lays down on the floor next to the child and says, "How can I make you feel heard?" And you're like, what? You're literally looking over there like, would someone swat that child across the rear end so they'll shut up? And the mom's, how can I make you feel heard? How can I make you feel loved? What do you need? These are the same people who think that if we just give these people room enough to, try out the drugs, they'll see how bad they are and they won't want to do it anymore.
Every time we see one of those situations in a restaurant or an airport or a store, I turn to my husband and I say, in 10 years, that kid is going to be in the back of a patrol car. You're absolutely right. And this all starts with the parents. And when no one is told no, then they end up in contact with someone like me, who has to take them to jail or take them to rehab or take them home. And, you know, it's a sad state of affairs, but that's where we're at.
Yep. So my husband's aunt told me when our daughter was going through the terrible twos and I was crying and, you know, not spanking her. And she said, well, if you don't spank her, the police will. I said, what? The police? She said, later on, her little unspanked booty will be in the back of a police car and she'll be resisting arrest. And then you'll be dealing with her then. And I was like, so not spanking her now means she'll be a criminal later? And she said, basically. She said, you know,
I love that.
I was being extreme. And she was like, basically, yes. And I thought about it. She said, if it was good enough for you, she said, were you spanked? I said, yes. She said, if it was good enough for you, why isn't it good enough for her? I said, I hated it. She said, but look how you've turned out. She said, you're not a criminal, law-abiding citizen, married mom, trying to raise a family, trying to do the right thing. I said, yeah, but I hated it. She said, but it worked for you. She said, why are you reinventing the wheel? Why are you trying to reinvent parenting? I was like, oh my gosh, the audacity. And of course, that night she had another 55-minute sustained tantrum and I went to bed crying. And the next day I thought, well, it was good enough for me. And I'm not talking about, you know, no, we're not talking about beating your kid. You're talking about a swat across the bottom because when they're that small, they don't need much. And I tell you, the first time I did it, my daughter looked at me and the hurt and the audacity on her face. She was like, you dare to say no? But that day things changed and she's now in medical school. So just in case anybody's sitting up saying, well, Stacey beats her daughter. I didn't beat her up. I just swatted her little bottom and she had on a pamper. So she barely felt anything. It was mainly the shock of the sound, but she has a very strong personality and she was demonstrating that to me. And there's nothing wrong with her strong personality, but she still has to listen because I didn't want her to run out in the street and get hit by a car. And, you know, there are like literally safety issues. And those are the kids, the ones who never, ever hear no from their parent, never get sat down in a timeout, a real timeout without a phone or an iPad. They never get told that was wrong. You say you're sorry. You're right. They're on drugs. They're running around doing crimes. They're flipping the bird in a foreign country because they're an illegal immigrant. These are the people we're talking about here.
Exactly. We almost need we need national parenting, like a parenting do-over. For so many of these people, because that it's exactly what we're dealing with this crime problem in the country, is people and many times young people who really have zero respect for the life, the property, and just the life experience of others. You know, again, and we've always talked about this, the Constitution says, I don't touch your stuff, you don't touch my stuff. And if one of us screws up, you get punished and you learn not to do it again. We've lost that entirely.
Well, it's not hard to get back. Just like anybody can turn things around with their, you know, little toddler. You can turn things around in a marriage. You can turn things around in a friendship. You can turn things around in a nation. Tonight, we've gone a long way towards doing that because we are now better informed, which is the situation after all of our visits with Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith. Thank you so much for coming in from the National Police Association. The website's nationalpolice.org. Visit her there and follow her on Twitter. She's amazing. Sergeant Betsy, thank you so much.
Thanks, Stacey. Can't wait to talk to you next time.
Oh, we'll talk again soon. Thank you for coming on. All right, 866-957-2874 if you want to weigh in. We will be right back.